In Unit 2, on purpose, we limited ourselves to two group designs just to get our feet under us. This unit, we're going to look at larger designs, and we're going to start with why. Why don't we run two group designs? Two condition designs work well to conduct basic treatment evaluations. They allow us to investigate whether or not a specific treatment has an effect, usually by comparing it to no treatment. Does a new treatment program help socially anxious clients compared to no treatment? However, as research questions and hypotheses become more sophisticated and specific, we often require designs that have multiple IV conditions. The easiest example I can think of is you just came up with a new headache remedy. You want to sell it. If the reason you give to buy your product is it works better than nothing, there's an awful lot of other things sitting out there on the shelves. And so a no treatment comparison isn't always the best way to run the study. What are our options? Well, we have different kinds of treatment conditions. Different treatments can differ quantitatively. The amount of treatment. How many times a week do you receive therapy? How many practices do you get before testing? Quantitative differences between treatments. We also have qualitative differences between treatments. Different kinds of clinical therapy. Whether or not feedback is given on practice trials. And we need to recognize, and we're going to spend a lot of time on this today, we have to recognize that most treatments that we develop have multiple elements. And it's one thing to say that a treatment works with all of its multiple elements ganging up on things. That's very different than saying why that treatment works. What elements of that treatment are actually having the positive effect? And so sometimes what we have to do is to try different combinations of treatment components. Bottom line, yellow stuff on the bottom is always important. The secret is to be sure the selection of conditions matches the research hypotheses you started with. See, here's the thing. We don't start with our research design. We end up with a research design. We start out with hypotheses. Those hypotheses tell us what comparisons we need. Those comparisons tell us what conditions we need. The conditions we end up deciding we need are our design. Because in the best of all possible worlds, we have a hypothesis about every pair of conditions in our design. And if we don't, we need to know why. And we need to be sure that it's not just that we missed something in the literature. So, the secret of designing is to make sure that you have the selection of conditions that you need to test the hypotheses you started with. It starts with hypotheses. Those require comparisons. Comparisons require particular conditions. Those conditions are your design. We're used to seeing the design first. And when you're reading and critiquing research, that's probably pretty common. Very few people write intentionally. There was some of this in the 70s and 80s, where the introduction was intentionally written in a way so that you could guess what the hypotheses were going to be and what the design was going to be before it was told to you. That was done intentionally. Not anymore. Different kinds of control conditions. Remember, the purpose of a condition is to provide for a comparison. So when we call something a control, we just mean we wouldn't normally do that expecting it to give us much of a benefit. Treatments are things that give us benefits. Controls are things that, well, don't really. Classic kind of control, the no treatment control. Ask if the treatment works better than nothing. But there's others. The standard treatment control. If you want to sell that headache remedy, it better be better than Tylenol and aspirin. And if you really want to sell it, you better be better than the best. The notion of a best practice as a control. This is where language becomes really, really important. The phrase that you want to start with, and then watch how it applies in your own area, is the magical phrase, including an ingredient most prescribed by doctors. All right? You heard that one? All right, let's play. What is the most commonly prescribed, magic word here, prescribed analgesic? And let's limit it to the United States just for the hell of it. Tylenol 3. You say, that's the Tylenol? Hell, I can walk out and, you can't walk out and buy Tylenol 3. Because Tylenol 3 has codeine in it. Notice the word prescribe. The reason Tylenol is prescribed is not the Tylenol. It's not the acetaminophen. It's the frickin' codeine. But when I say includes the ingredient most prescribed by doctors, I can now sell you over-the-counter Tylenol because Tylenol 3 has it in it. That's not why they're prescribing Tylenol 3. They're prescribing it for the codeine, but it has acetaminophen in it. So I can say includes the ingredient most prescribed by doctors. You with me? Not the active functional ingredient most prescribed by doctor, but some other shit that goes along with it because we're selling Tylenol. We can't not put Tylenol in it. How are we doing? So you got to watch for when people are talking about a combination of relatively active and relatively inactive elements, and they're wedging those together and they're telling you about what they want to tell you about. Pseudo-treatment control. A pseudo-treatment control is isolating a particular causal element in a multiple element treatment. Remember when we did the thing about the laundry and you had the really dirty, dark color, da-da-da-da-da, and all those confounds were stacked? That's what we're talking about here. If we're going to say that this is a cause, that can be the only difference between the conditions. Good example of pseudo-treatment control. A particular part of your ventromedial hypothalamus controls food cravings and body weight. So we take a, and we want to prove that. So we take a bunch of rats, we split them into two groups. These rats stay in their home cage. These rats get randomly assigned. These rats get anesthetized. We cut a hole in their scalp, drill a hole in their skull, lower an electrode down to particularly that exact spot on the ventromedial hypothalamus, which we can do. That's not a problem. And then we lesion that part of the ventromedial hypothalamus. They go back in the home cage for the next 6 weeks. They get all the food and water they drink. So does the control group. At the end of 6 months, these are plumper than these because of the lesion of the ventromedial hypothalamus. Now look what we did. There's several differences between the two groups, but we're saying it's this one. When you anesthetize rats, there's massive individual differences in how rats refer to anesthesia in terms of their eating habits, and as eating habits go, so go body weight. Putting a hole in their skull, you're lowering an electrode down there with the intent of getting to a particular part of the ventromedial hypothalamus, but you are wedging it through parts of the brain that are also part of food consumption, craving, and body weight gain. And then you're saying, no, 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 ignore all of that. It's the lesion. So if you want to say it's the lesion, you need a pseudo-treatment control. The other group of rats doesn't go hang out in the home cage. They also get anesthetized, cut in their scalp, hole in their skull, lower the electrode, but don't fire the lesion. Now, the difference between the groups is the lesion per se. How are we doing? Some people call it the rule of one difference. You can only have one difference, and that's the difference that has cause attributed to it. Once again, When you're picking all these different treatment conditions, the secret is to be sure that the selections of conditions matches the research hypotheses you started with. Again, hypotheses require comparisons. Comparisons require conditions. The collection of conditions is the design. I really want you to start thinking about that. I want everything to start with hypotheses. Now, one of the things you need to be careful about is that this shit can get away from you. We got all these different kinds of treatment conditions and all these different kinds of control conditions, and the next thing you know, you've gone from a 2-condition design to a 64-condition design. And there's just a couple more that you really need. Okay? One of the ways that we limit that is we try to hold ourselves to the criteria of having a literature-borne a priori hypothesis for our different condition comparisons. Okay? That's one of the ways that we rein this in. Is we insist that there be a reason, a particular comparison that tests a particular notion or hypothesis or idea. So, one of the things that I hear often enough that I made a slide about it. Every design doesn't need a no treatment control group. Well, there's no treatment control group. I don't care. I only care if there's a no treatment control group, if there's a hypothesis comparing one of the treatments to nothing. If there is, I need a nothing treatment. If there's not, I don't need a nothing treatment. Some control conditions are horribly expensive, whether in terms of time, real resources, or ethics. An awful lot of good has come out of the study We used to take the rats and we shoved the rats in a tube and we hooked an electrode up to their tail and we shocked them and there wasn't a damn thing we could do about it. What's that called? Yes! Learned helplessness. Bless you. Can you follow me around the rest of the day helping me with words I lose? Learned helplessness. What happens is if you shock them long enough, they give up. And they give up on everything else you ask them to do. This is hard on rats. It's also hard on rat researchers. And so one of the things that was decided fairly early in the research is we need to have baseline behavior on multiple dependent variables so we know what would happen in this condition so we can stop running it. Because we need a comparison to that condition. Because then we're going to try all sorts of other things. Different variations of that, different intercessions, different treatments. A lot of important stuff has come out of that. Including a lot of the work, a lot of the success currently in PTSD comes out of some of the early learned helplessness work. But the control condition, the particular control condition was just so awful that nobody wanted to run it any more than we had to. And so there was a whole movement to, as quickly as possible, with as few rats as possible, and frankly, as few researchers as possible. No area of research had more people leave the discipline than that area of research. It makes dentists look like happy people. So the question is, what do I need for a control group? And like most of the other stuff we do in here, it's not hard. You just got to remember to stop and do it. Can you tell if a variable's measured or manipulated? Sure you can if you stop and look. So, my new treatment works better than the currently used behavioral therapy technique. What's my control group? The currently used behavioral therapy technique. You with me? That's it. That's how hard this is. The thing is to think of it and do it every time. My new treatment works better than no treatment. What do I need for control?
No treatment.
My new treatment works because of the combination of the usual and the new behavioral components. I need at least 2 control groups. What are they?
The usual, just new.
And if I wanted to, neither. How are we doing? Now, here's one you want to watch out for. This is becoming increasingly common. My new treatment works better when given by a PhD than a master's level clinician. The treatment is a procedural constant. The IV is something else. This time the IV was the person who delivers it. Or it could be setting, or it could be time. One of the really amazing times to be doing research was when quick therapies, short-term therapies came out. Because the question is, so one runs for 6 weeks and one runs for 18 months. Well, you got a time confound. No, you don't. Because what part of what defines quick is less of it. That's part of the manipulation. It's not a confound. You with me? You have to think about the operationalization of the treatment. Because an operationalization of a treatment can't be a confound comparing it to others. Yeah, try and figure out how you're going to spread a 6 week treatment over 18 months. People actually ran the condition. They just did it the same number of meetings as the 6 week over the 18 months. It's a horrible waste of time and energy. Everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. But at the time, it was like, no, that's a confound. No, it isn't. It's a defining element of the frickin' treatment. This is why it always goes back to that boring old shit that we started with, operational definitions. But I'm a big bad researcher now. I don't have to worry about that. No, you have to worry about it more. Because as we start splitting hairs, we have to split them really carefully. Once again, the secret is to make sure that your selection of conditions matches the research hypotheses. A design is a selection of conditions. Oh, look, I knew. Now, anything that we can get out of a multiple condition study, we can get out of the right set of two condition studies. The big advantage is cost. Let's say that I have enough money to run this. I have enough money to run six conditions. All right? You look at this and you say, well, when we do this, we're getting replication. Because we've run the treatment one twice, we've run the control twice, we've run the treatment two twice. We are unlikely to care about the replication of a condition. We care about the replication of a comparison. Right? When we form hypotheses, hypotheses are about whether there's a difference here or there. Rarely do we have a hypothesis about the value, the mean of this group. We want to know if this means different than that mean. But we only get the comparison of treatment one and the control one time while spending for six conditions being run. Whereas, if we run this three condition study twice, that's our six conditions. That's our budget. But not only do we have reps of each condition to see whether that mean tends to be stable and that standard deviation tends to be stable, but we also have replications of each group comparison. So just to fuss about that a little bit, when we talk about replication, we're not talking about replicating conditions, we're talking about replicating comparisons. And I know that's one of those things that I say that's like, well, no shit, Cal. Well, hold on to no shit. If it really is no shit, never forget it. All right.